You remind me of somebody, and I can't.
I remind you of Tobey Maguire.
That's it. Spider-Man.
Yep.
You're gosh darn Spider-Man. That's
Simply
been bothering
a lot
me.
Less sexy.
Yep, I am Spider-Man in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And not so much in a lot of other ways. So.
We need to explore this thinking.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Spider-Man.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and we all know who's on the other side.
Hi.
Ugh. Now, our intros have gone from bad to just creepy.
They're always bad. They're always creepy, and they're always dumb.
They're usually not creepy. You made it creepy.
Sorry. Just trying to be me. Being judged.
Guess what I'm drinking?
Milk?
Mm-mm.
Water?
Water with lemon juice and apple cider vinegar.
Man, is it like an age thing?
I'm replenishing. Shut up, young man. I'm replenishing my alkalinity.
I'm drinking prune juice on the rocks.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, you know, well, health has been an issue for me.
Welcome back to As the Story Grows! Yeah, you've been going through a lot lately. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it's really fun to edit podcasts with no hands.
Using your feet. Shoulder might be in there for life. Happy Thanksgiving!
Yeah, really. And somehow we managed to still put episodes out. How in the world does that happen?
I don't know. Did our best.
We did. I applaud you. And I applaud
don't,
myself.
Don't applaud too hard. Your glue will...
Yeah. Yeah. I applaud... Ah!
My tendons just spilled all over the computer. Oh,
I gotta go. I'm bleeding.
Oh, boy. All right, so yeah. Let's get back on track here. A bunch of old men drinking our lemon juice. You told me you were super stoked about some vinyl purchases.
Purchases?
Go ahead. Tell me about your purchases.
Well, I did purchase a couple vinyl records. It was Black Friday, and I took advantage of that. But I didn't get them
ever
yet.
Say Black Friday again.
Yeah.
That was gross.
I know. I had a little Snoop coming out of me.
Very little. How about none?
Yeah. The only thing I have in common with Snoop is I get the munchies really bad. Yeah. So So I did get some vinyl, but I didn't get them quite yet. Although I did get one of them. I got the Charlie Brown Christmas album, the Vince, how do you say his last name? Giraldi? Vince Giraldi Trio?
Smith.
What?
Smith.
No, wrong.
Yeah. Pronounce it Smith.
Anywho.
Awesome. That one?
Yeah, the famous soundtrack with all the, like, you know, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Skating.
I actually love that stuff.
Yeah, I got it on vinyl. It came with it, and it's green transparent vinyl. So obviously it's a reissue. It's not like a 60s copy or something.
Right.
But yeah, so that's cool. We've been jamming that, trying to get in the Christmas spirit, you know.
Right on.
Which I have none of at this point. But so I got that. But I also got it's the Melvins went to Jack White's studio, Third Man. Is it called Third Man? Did I get that right?
Yeah. I think it's called Third Man.
Third Man. Yeah. And they recorded direct to vinyl. There's a process of which the name escapes me, something acetate, where you go in the studio, no overdubs, basically like, you know, the Man of Constant Sorrow, Oh Brother Art Thou, like, let's go in, sing in a can, and like, we're going to walk out of the building the same day with a warm, fresh-baked vinyl.
Right.
Like, that was kind of what the deal was. Jack White being both incredibly nostalgic and historical with his music making and also rich, he was able to create the studio that exists. And the Melvins, the freaking almighty Melvins, went in and cut a live record.
That is rad.
Yeah, like old school. Like, and did their class, just a lot of their classic hits, for lack of a better word, and released it. And it's cheap. You can get it on Amazon for like less than 14, 15 bucks. It's called Live at Third Man. And it's sounds amazing. I heard a couple sound clips. I didn't get to listen to it yet all the way through, but I heard some samples of it, and it just sounds so heavy and
excellent.
Just has a cool production to it. So yeah, I got that. I'm excited. What'd you get?
I got a pretty funny story. Keep bringing up Jonathan Petkow, this freaking guy. He direct messages me on Twitter, and he says, "Do you have Mastodon, Crack the Sky on vinyl?" I said, "No." And he said, "Do you have Zao, Where Blood and Fire Bring Rest?" And I was like, "No." And I'm thinking, no one has that, right?
It's pretty hard to get, yeah.
He goes, "You want them?" And I was like, "Yeah, how much?" And he's like, "No, you can have them. I bought them for myself. I don't have a record player, or my record player broke or something. I forget that part of it. But basically, I have no way to play records right now. And I was going to hang them on the wall because I thought they would look cool on the wall, but I just don't give a shit anymore. So you can have them." And I was like, "Okay, thanks." So he just charged me shipping from Canada, and he gets a crazy discount with shipping.
So let me get this straight. Let me get this straight.
Go on.
You got how many co-hosts are there on this show?
Co-hosts? Just one.
Really?
Just you?
But you're like a co-host to me. So like we're together.
Co-hosts. Oh, I see what you did. Okay, so how many?
I see how it is. Yeah. Now I see how it is. Ah.
Well, I'm the one getting Zao records.
Exactly. So there's two of us, and there's two free records.
Mm-hmm.
If
he would have sent me two Zao Blood and Fires, I would have sold one and bought you something nice.
Maybe one of those
Third Man albums for $15. Maybe I'd have done that. Sorry, man.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You want one? Is that what you're getting at?
Hey, Petco, you got another one? Hey, Scott, if you're listening, do you have any of those?
He doesn't even have one. I told him about it. He's like, "No shit, you're getting one? I don't even have one of those."
Does he listen to vinyl?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's a big vinyl guy.
Scott, please send me some vinyl. Actually, I have Liberate's reissue, and I have the self-titled reissue.
If I give you one of those, it'll be the Mastodon album, because I know you don't like them.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. All right, awesome. Moving on.
All right, well, you asked.
Well, thanks, Petco.
Yeah, thanks for nothing. Yeah, thanks for nothing.
Thank you.
You should drop that Caddyshack line in there. Well, thanks for nothing.
I don't even know that. I don't know that line.
Oh, You disgust me. You don't deserve a Zayo album.
Hey, I remember the Baby Ruth in the pool.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So anyway, moving on. Depressed. You know, I'm not like obsessed with Blood and Fire. Like, I'm not like, man, I'm going to spend $600 on that vinyl. I don't care. I have to own it.
Right.
But it's like the production and it's, you know, it's old school. And I feel
it's
like
that era. It's that
like
era.
A recording of that. Yeah, that probably would sound really cool. And
yep.
Would love to have a one day I'll find a copy of that.
I gave you Nine Inch Nails, A Downward Spiral on double vinyl a long, long time ago. And this is karma coming back around, helping out Trav. That's all it is.
Well, I'll one-up you because I have a very small list of vinyl that is out of print and really hard to find, but one day I will get it or I won't feel complete. I have like a small list. And on that list, there's, you know, just a small handful of records. One of them is like, you know, the Mortification Scrolls in the Megaloth white LP that's like super rare.
Oof.
The original Vengeance Human Sacrifice vinyl with the cover. I got the picture disc reissue, but
I got the picture disc too. Yeah.
Yeah. I want the old one with the dusty cover. One of them is actually a newer release from 2008. It's the album by Polvo called In Prism.
Oh, I love
it. Which is their best record. It's my favorite Polvo record. It was an amazing comeback album.
Yep.
And
thank the thing's sold out.
Yeah, totally. That was a two LP gatefold release that they put it out one time
mm-hmm.
when it came out, sold out like right away, and right you can't away. Find that freaking thing. And if you do, it's expensive. It's like, you know, $100 or more.
I've never even seen it anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I officially own it now.
What?
Yeah. This dude was selling.
You got how much?
Well, he was selling it for $60 on Discogs. And and he had a make an offer tab, and I was like, okay, so you're wheeling and dealing, you're open to some suggestions. So I was like, how about 40? I was like, $20 is kind of hard to chip away. It's like when you're, you know, $40, $20 is not a big deal when you're talking about $150, but mm-hmm. when you're talking about $60, you know, you're taking a third of his money away. But I was like, let's see if he goes for it. And he was just immediately sent me an invoice.
Like, no way.
It was like $5 extra for shipping. So it was like $45. I was like, I got it.
I would have paid $45 for that. Good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's the first pressing, too. So, I mean, they may reissue it someday down the road, but
right.
At least I can say it's the first pressing of it. You know?
Awesome.
And I don't know.
I went out and bought when they put out Siberia. I went out and got that right away, too, just because I thought. Look what happened in Prism.
I did the same thing.
If you don't get it, you ain't gonna get it. You know.
Yeah. Ironically, though, Siberia is still really cheap and available.
Oh yeah, and yeah. For some reason, they did they mass produce that one or something. Siberia is everywhere. I know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But yeah. So that's my vinyl story for the week.
Good for you. Well, I'm happy for you. See, I'm happy for you. I'm not going. Oh, it's unfair. I'd rather.
Yeah, I'm happy for me too.
Yeah, you're not pissing and moaning about the Zayo album, but I mean, I'm happy for you with the.
But I will say, if there are any listeners out there who want to get rid of their records and send me a copy of something, please feel free. I'll be your best friend.
Send it to Travis Turner, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Travis Turner has lots of best friends from this podcast. I have none. I'm the lonely little man sitting in the mountains by himself with his hands in sutured up and glued.
Well, when they send me all the cool stuff, I'll give you the stuff I don't want. You can have it. I mean, you deserve it as the co-host.
God. Yeah. So who are we talking to this week?
I want to hear
from your mouth, from your lips.
You want to hear it out of my mouth hole. We are talking to Mike Holt from the Huntingtons.
Mikey Huntington. Yeah.
You've known this guy for, I think we did the math, 95 years.
It feels like that, yes. I met him in 94 or 95. They were called Cricket back then.
I remember and, that.
Yeah, they were a little local punk band from Philadelphia area called Cricket, and they played Philly a lot. That's when I would see them.
Uh-huh.
And they changed their name to the Huntingtons. They put out Sweet 16 on Flying Tart Records.
Flying Tart.
Yeah, and they were just sort of a Philly scene band for a while, and we went to their show and got to know them, and they played my graduation party.
I saw them one time in my life because the Huntingtons are a particular genre of music that I don't really partake in that often. But yeah. I was at a very, very, very special private Huntington show. That's the one time that I saw them. It was in my aunt and uncle's house.
Their merch booth for their CDs and cassettes of Sweet 16, which was all they had out at the time, was in my bedroom. It was on my bed. I can say this, that I had one Tooth and Nail recording artist play my bedroom and sell their merch on my bed. So, yeah, we go back a long ways. We played a million shows together, Tantrum of the Muse and Huntington's, and an odd mix, but we were all just good friends, and yeah, I actually sang on some of their albums and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were all sort of living in the same area. And like I was living in Delaware, so Cliff and I would hang out all the time. And
Tantrum and the Muse, Tantrum and the Muse and the Huntingtons intersected also in that your old drummer in Tantrum and your best friend Rick became the drummer for the Huntingtons.
Yeah, he was about as long running as their first drummer, actually, if you consider all the years since. But yeah, so we just have a really long history and a friendship with those guys, and I enjoy their music. I actually think several of their records are really solid, and Mike's a brilliant pop writer. He knows the hooks, and he just knows how to write a really catchy, solid song.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not all the same, and that's what I like too. Is you know, and,
I'll give him that.
In a pop punk kind of a band, you can have a lot of repetition, but especially a band that's really pushing Ramones sound.
Yeah.
But honestly, they have so many good songs that stick out on their own. And so, yeah, I've always been a big fan of their band, and it was cool to get to talk to them. And
I like some of their later stuff, the Sweet 16 stuff when I was literally 16 and watched, or you were, I was 18 or 19 or I was kind of like, okay, well, they're Steven's buddy, so I'll be nice to him. But as they, just like any band, as they moved on and matured and got better songwriting and everything, they definitely crossed over into that, like, wow, I'm not even into this, and it's catchy. And I'm tapping my foot and singing along. So, yeah, good on you.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I when Cliff left the band and they were doing some small gigs, I think they were building up to go out to Cornerstone. In 2005, I was asked to play, fill in for Cliff for the local shows to build up to get to where they were heading with when they were going to meet up with Cliff. Mm. So I ended up actually playing two shows with the Huntingtons, which is really funny if you think about that. And funny not for because of them, but because of me. I mean, I don't quite fit in if you look at me. But they gave me the honorary name Chubby Huntington.
Chubby Huntington.
Awesome. And that came from when I was hanging out at Cliff's house and I tried to put on one of their t-shirts and it was a medium. And time I was in like an XL or 2X or something, then squeezed into it and my stomach was hanging out. It was like a half shirt and Cliff was like crying. He was laughing so hard. And
that's awesome.
And so that's how that nickname came along. But
I would have I would have named you Sexy Huntington. I wanna know why. Just don't know how that hurts me so. And what can I do to convince you to let me go? Was it something that I said or something that I did? Something that I lost or something that I hid? Tell me once again, was it something that I said? It's just not right. Well, it's just not right. Well, it's just not right that you won't tell me goodbye. Well, it's just not right. I wanna know why. Every time I try to make sense to you, you turn your back with no reply. You just don't know how that hurts me so. And what can I do to convince you to let me go? Was it something that I said or something that I did? That I lost, but something that I hit. Tell me once again, was it something that I said? It's just not right, not too much. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing as good as I can do on a Tuesday night.
Okay, that's fair.
I totally understand that. Yeah.
And I have reason to believe that we are also going to be occasionally joined by Ms. Jen Holt.
Yeah, she's a mere 16 inches away here or so.
Gotcha. And,
whoa.
She tends to keep me in check when I say ridiculous things.
Good.
Which happens quite often.
Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Good. I just had to hear her voice at least one time because we've barely ever had any women on the podcast, so I'm trying to get more diverse.
Yeah.
You know?
I was thinking about that the other day, actually. I was like, we got to start, like, we got to get away from the sausage club.
Sausage fest.
Right, yeah. Right. No, dude, I understand because I do a show too, and it's nothing but a sausage party every single time we do it.
Yeah, but your podcast is called Sausage Party. That's probably
that would be an amazing title, but we went with something different. But literally, that would have been a totally descriptive title. Sausage Fest. It's amazing.
I love it.
tell us about your podcast.
Yeah.
Well, it's more of a I guess I hesitate to call it a podcast because we do it a live video stream up until about a month ago. We did it biweekly since last April. Mm-hmm. It's called The Absolute Awesome Show because sarcastically it's anything but absolutely awesome. we just sort of meet myself and the guitarists from the Huntingtons, Josh and Cliff. Mm-hmm. We get together and pretty much a day before we do the show, we randomly seek out someone we think would be cool to talk to, like from our past, someone we toured with, someone we've just known throughout the years, and just say, hey, man, come talk to us on Thursday night. It's super chill. We don't have any topics. We don't talk to you ahead of time. You just come on, and we just go. And so we do that for, I don't know, you know, we start at 9. We do it for like a half hour, 40 minutes, and then we send the link out public through Facebook and other places.
Right.
And like a 10-person video call, similar to what we're doing now, but we open it up and people can come in, and it's live, and it streams live, and it's there. If we say something stupid, it's there. We don't cut it. We don't edit it.
Yeah,
you can't.
That's why Jen sits next to me, because she nudges me, and she goes, stop, you're being stupid. So it helps. You know, you guys got the cool thing going where you can kind of maybe take out stupid crap I say, but she keeps me in check on the live shows.
That's good. I need Sarah to do that for me.
Rip all the audio, and then like sometimes I throw it into Dropbox and I can stream it to my phone while I'm working, and I think, oh man, I sound like a complete ass. I should probably cut that out. But we honestly try not to cut. We really don't cut anything out unless it's like a wonky signal or something. Like I have to pee, and then there's 3 minutes of silence or something. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that'll happen. I'll definitely have to take a piss at some point tonight. Yeah. So you'll be cutting that. So yeah.
Nice.
But usually on the live stream,
actually leave it on.
On the live stream, I put this beautiful picture of myself up in the suit, and then I mute my mic, and then there's like 9 other people that keep talking while I go and piss, and then I come back, and it's like it never happened. So it's actually kind of nice. So
how do you keep 9 people, 10 people on your show without it being like the audio just being completely crazy? Like we struggle with 3 people sometimes, you know.
It gets a little crazy because people tend to overtalk. And then we've got a couple of like regulars that come on the show that don't seem to understand the fact that everything that comes into your microphone, whether you're on a laptop or on a phone, actually comes into the Hangout. So if you're walking around and your kids are screaming and yelling at each other, or you're you know, you're taking the trash out and you're slamming trash cans around, that feeds into our show. And so I give mod controls to Josh. And then McCliff doesn't really know how to do mods. I give them to Josh, and so we're like, all right, we'll mute you or we'll hide you from the broadcast for a minute until you get your crap together.
Yeah.
And we just kind of try to control it that way and apologize. Hey, sorry, we muted you, but you're like running around your kitchen with pans and pots and pans clanging around. So just come back when you're a little more chill. We don't always get a full room. Sometimes we just get a handful of people, and it's just a kind of a casual conversation. But moderated as best we can.
You guys do that every Thursday?
Every other Thursday. We've kind of slacked off since. Let me track back to the. Interestingly enough, the last show if my memory serves me, was with the guitarist.
Jen, you know?
Jen would probably know. I think I'm getting this right. It was with the guitarist of Teenage Bottle Rocket, and then a week and a half later, their drummer passed away.
Yeah, I saw that.
Since then, we actually haven't done a show for a variety of reasons, not the least of which Chris, our current Huntington's drummer, and Josh are on tour in Europe with CJ Ramone right now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They've actually been, you know, they were preparing for that for a while. Yeah. I've actually been doing some recording with Cliff on a solo project. So there's been sort of other things kind of taking up our time, and we haven't really had a chance. So it's been a couple of weeks since we've done one. We're gonna do one more next Thursday and bring Chris and Josh in from Europe. I think they're gonna be in the UK next week.
Oh, cool!
All right. And get like an update on how the tour is going, and that's gonna be kind of like the finale for the year, and then we'll pick it back up in 2016.
Nice. How's your listenership? Like, have people been turning in and?
It's on the small side. I mean, the biggest show we've done, we did a show with CJ Ramone back in September, I think, and that was definitely our biggest show. I think to date on YouTube, it's got about 1,300 views or something like that. So it's not overwhelming. But this all spawned from an idea. Like, Josh was doing a podcast last year where he would record interviews over the phone with people. And he called it the Josh Pit, which I thought was a genius name for a podcast, the Josh Pit.
That is cool.
And I was like, dude, why don't we just get together? You're doing the same. You're doing this thing where you're basically just grabbing musicians that you've played with over the years or whoever. Yeah. And, you know, that's cool. That's a good idea. But, man, we can throw them on video. We can chat from people around the world. Like, we can get tons of people involved in this. Let's just throw it on Google Hangouts and do it that way. So that's where it all kind of sprang from. Mm-hmm. But none of us go out of our way to promote it. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
Hey, we got so-and-so on the show this week. Hey, 200 Facebook followers, come watch it. So it's we don't really do a whole lot to kind of like push it. And that's on us, you know. That's our fault. So we get what we get, you know.
It sounds like you get a good amount regardless, though. I mean, maybe if you guys actually what's that?
You're doing it for fun. You're hanging out.
Yeah. We're doing it for fun. Yeah, exactly. And what's cool is that there's been shows where once the actual live feed, you know, goes off air and you kick it off air, we've gone on for 3 hours, like with just people in the room completely off air talking about whatever we want to talk about. And that's
wild, man.
It's a fun time. And we get a lot of regulars, and you know we get some newbies once in a while. I think a lot of times people are a little intimidated about clicking a link and entering into a video chat that's streaming on the internet that can maybe even still in 2015 be a little intimidating. But
yeah, especially with if they're like fans of the band and stuff like that, I would think like you know they would feel like, I mean, do you find that a lot of the listeners are fans of the Huntingtons and stuff like that, or?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's what I figured. Like, yeah. And they might be like, "Oh, this is kind of cool. We can hang out with the band and stuff." But
yeah,
intimidating too.
Yeah, exactly. It ends up kind of
into their band practice or something.
it kind of ends up coming back full circle where we bring in someone that we toured with, you know, back in the day. We chat with them about old time stories that we, you know, want to share, funny stuff. You know, where are you now? What have you been doing? And ultimately, it comes back full circle to kind of center around Huntington's related stuff. I mean, even if we don't intend it to. So it does tend to draw, like, that kind of an audience.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's been fun. It's cool.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of Huntington's, you know, you guys have been clearly doing more than you had been doing. First, the couple new shows you guys did, which I missed all of them, unfortunately. Hopefully, you guys will do a Pennsylvania gig one of these days. But, what I kind of assumed maybe it was like a benefit or something, but you guys seem to be going a little further. You just announced you're doing audio feed festival.
Yeah, next July. Yep.
Yeah. What exactly is going on? Are you kind of at a point now where you've been able to sort of like balance everything out, and you kind of want to step back into it a little bit, or what's going on with that?
To a degree. I mean, the approach for the last couple of years has been, we're not really an active band, but if someone out of the blue calls us up or shoots us a message and says, hey, would you like to do this? Then we'll pass it around between us and say, hey, is this something that, you know, is there a soccer game that weekend? Because my kids play soccer. So it's like,
never ends.
There is, you know, and everyone's the same way. Everyone has something in their life that kind of takes priority over doing band stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, can we make this work? Okay, cool. Yeah, we can make that work. Okay, let's do that. So that's kind of been the approach for the last couple of years, and really the reason why we don't do a whole heck of a lot, because we sort of just wait for people to call us, which is not really the way a band that's looking for opportunities to play live, and
yeah,
really not the way you handle your business. You know, you're kind of on the attack, but that's the way we're handling it. And it's like, okay, cool, we get some neat opportunities, awesome, we'll make sure it fits with everyone's life and this and the schedules that they have going on in their life, and if it does, then we'll do it. And the audio feed thing has actually been something that's kind of been proposed to us for the last 2 years, I think. And it just hasn't been really anything that we could logistically make work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This year, with just everybody kind of being on board to maybe open up and do a little bit more, it worked out. So, I mean, in addition to audio feed, we are actually going to try to do two shows on the way out there. We haven't announced those yet because they're still kind of in the works. But, you know, if you're going to drive to Illinois, you might as well play a show or two on the way.
I remember, it's basically Cornerstone, this place. I mean, it's like much smaller. I guess it's trying to be the next Cornerstone. I guess that's kind of the vibe I got from it. But yeah, man. So
I feel like Cornerstone, I don't know financially where they were at and everything, but I feel like now, I mean, I heard Duff McKagan say it on a podcast one time. Right now, live music is just like the live performance is just saturated. There's so many bands on the road all the time because it's all they have left. And I feel like, man, I feel like Cornerstone tapped out at the wrong time. Like, I feel like I don't understand what exactly all happened and everything, but everybody is on the road. Everybody. Yeah. Cornerstone would benefited from that. I just feel like, I think 2012 is when they finally stuck a fork in it, and I feel like, man, if they would have just hung in there for a couple more years, I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm right about that or not. I'm just curious. I'm curious what your opinions would be about it.
I mean, I have no insight whatsoever into why they decided to not do it anymore. So it would be pure speculation. Like, I really don't know.
Right.
But I tend to agree that audio feed is kind of trying to say, hey, that went away, and there really was an audience that, even though it went away, still appreciated it.
Yeah.
And would still come, and there would still be people from out of state that would still travel to like make a weekend out of it. So let's kind of pick that up where they left off. And even though maybe it's not as big and as extravagant as what Cornerstone ended up, which speculatively may have been why they had to call it quits, because it got maybe a little bit too big.
Okay.
You know, let's kind of pick that back up, bring in bands, make a 3-day festival out of it, and you know, do what we can. And you know, they've been doing it now for a couple of years, so it seems to be at least enough to keep them going from year to year. But you know, I have no clue why they decided to call it a day.
Me neither.
I mean, from the stuff that I've heard, I think it was a financial. I know it was a financial reason that they closed, because I spoke to some people from Jesus People USA, and they said it was just they couldn't afford to keep it going anymore. And I would say it's probably the oversaturation is part of what killed it, because it just became so much. It's, you know, it's like you eat too much cake and then you just want to throw up. You know, it's like I feel like
it lost sort of that. There was a time where it shifted, or where it didn't feel quite like the same place, and it just started becoming like anybody could come, anybody could get a show, and you know, you were just drowning in bands. Just, I don't know. It just felt like it wasn't, you know, having too much of something good. It always sort of dampers it a little bit. You start to lose the thrill of the, you know, it's like anything. You know, it's too much of anything. It's just like, don't you feel like that? Like, you know, like right now we have so many options of what to watch, so many options of what to listen to, that we end up like not caring about anything that we watch or anything we
listen
to. It's kind of like that in anything, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't watch any television at all. There's not a single regularly scheduled TV show that I keep up with. Yeah. And I think eventually you just kind of burn out on it. I mean, some people do, not everybody. I mean, Jen, who we mentioned earlier, who is still sitting right next to me.
Hi, Jen.
We're going to say hi every time you bring her in.
She watches plenty of regularly scheduled television shows, and she hates it. She hates it whenever I sit down and attempt to watch them with her, because 3 minutes in, I'm picking them apart saying, gosh, this show is so stupid. Like, it's just so terrible. And
Everything doesn't have to make analytical sense in your brain.
I know. She's more of a cheap thrill entertainment type person, and I'm more of a that just is completely ridiculous.
Okay, give us an example. What show is Jen sitting there like totally like Indian style bowl of popcorn, like yes, and you sit down and just shit on it?
What's the last one I did that to?
No, it wasn't Breaking Bad, was it?
Oh. Breaking. No, I actually really, really like Breaking Bad. Might have been the last TV show shy of Trailer Park Boys that I kept up with.
Yes, Trailer Park
Boys. I will watch Trailer Park Boys until they stop watching.
You put freaking
what
stupid characters as your profile picture.
That's right, Trailer Park Boys. No doubt about it. That show is genius in so many ways. But let's just get back to it. Breaking Bad was a great show. But there's so many shows out there. Like, I mean, it's just like what Stephen was saying.
You
saturate the networks with just same stuff, and it's like, gosh, how do you keep up with these shows that just basically do the same thing week in, week out? I don't know.
My wife still totally veges out with reruns of Friends. And I sit down and I watch a couple episodes with her, and I'm like, this show is so bad. It's literally insulting the audience, and they're just laughing. Like, nobody acts like that. Nobody has that many quirks and interesting little isms about themselves, and the crowd is just like, bah, ha, ha. And I'm like, this is terrible television, but I must be wrong, because that thing was on for forever, and they were making like $1 million per episode at one point, all six of them. That's batshit. I'm never going to understand that. Yet they cancel Arrested Development.
I mean, off the top of my head, unless I requested Jen to give me an example, I mean, she watches The Blacklist. She watches practically every sci-fi show that there is.
I love sci-fi.
She watches.
Oh, really? I can't stomach sci-fi channel.
Oh, gosh, they're horrible. And not to mention Haven, okay? So there's a show called Haven, and two or three weeks ago, I see Jim Leahy pop up on Haven. And I'm like, I didn't know Jim Leahy was on Haven. And sure as hell, Dunsworth, what's his name? whatever the actor's name is. I don't even care to call him by his real name, because he's just Jim Leahy. But whatever Jim Leahy's name is on Haven. I'm like, no. You are a drunk Trailer Park supervisor. You are not on some sci-fi show. That doesn't exist. So, I don't know. I like my entertainment in a very specific way, and anything that falls outside of that is just nonsense to me.
You also never have your fairy tale ending in movies either. He has to have the morbidly depressing end of seven.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I kind of don't like the happy-go-lucky ending.
I'm with you. I'm with you. It's ridiculous.
Now, it's not to say that no movie should ever end that way, but good grief.
We have enough misery in our lives, in everyday lives.
Right, I want it to mirror our lives.
Right.
It needs to be a fairy tale ending and make you feel good, and be the reason why you paid that $13
right.
to go see
so
it.
So when in the course of 43 minutes after commercials, a team of exceptional smart people solved some kind of riddle or crime, it's like, gosh, just shoot me in the face. Like, this is so stupid.
Men versus women. Because the majority of women are going to like...
Yes, granted. I don't get in the way.
And yes, that's very stereotypical.
I probably only make my feelings known once or twice a month. I don't beat her over the head with it every time she watches one of these silly shows.
Right.
Because you have your headphones in the entire time listening to your podcast.
That's true.
Nice. You listen back to your own podcast, you narcissistic son of a... No, I'm kidding.
I know. I like looking at my beautiful face.
He's got a poster of his avatar on his like bedroom ceiling.
Right.
He goes to sleep staring at himself in that suit.
He wakes up and he's like, "Good morning, handsome."
That suit was expensive. He had to wear it at a friend's wedding.
Yeah,
so
you
better
it.
Get a
You got to get your use. Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks. At least you guys have an opinion, an actual like opinion. What I don't understand is like, what happens at my house is like, and I'm to blame too. I do this too, but like my wife hates a lot of like those like American Idol shows and The Voice and all that stuff. Like we both hate that stuff. But for some reason that TV show will be on and like my wife will sit in front of it and watch it. But like she's kind of not really watching, she's sort of just playing with her phone as it's on. So it's like we got terrible TV on, but we're kind of not really watching it. And so it's like we don't even have an opinion of it, but we hate it. Like we hate it, but we can't. But we're there watching it, sort of half-assedly. You know,
everything you just said was nonsense. I don't understand anything you just said. You hate American Idol, but you sit in front of it, hating it.
I don't. My wife sits in front of it. She's out there watching it right now. That show, The Voice. But she's not like engaged at all. Like, she doesn't care. It's not like she's like, "Well, I really hope so and so wins."
She just wants to look at Adam Levine.
Oh God, no! Please. No.
Or it's just background noise.
Dude,
I mean,
whatever.
I think it's just like she's got you know, she's watching Alice. She's holding her. She's staring at her phone. She's just kind of like checked out with it. But it's on. It's like background noise.
I'll admit it. I think Adam Levine is gorgeous.
Oh God.
What?
Oh, man. Maroon 5 is such a great band.
I didn't say that.
So, but going back to our original conversation of oversaturation. No, we don't have to talk about that anymore.
We're going to oversaturate the talk about oversaturation.
Yes, we've already oversaturated that talk. Here's the golden question. Our mutual friend, all of our mutual friend, Rick Wise. Is he not in the band anymore? How did that work out?
Rick has been a longtime member of Huntington's, and it's just been really difficult to, like I was saying earlier, where when an opportunity comes in, we sort of pass it around to everyone and say, does this fit with your life? And you know, a lot of times, you know, all of us say, nope, that just doesn't fit. And it's a really easy no. And occasionally it boils down to maybe like one or two people that say it doesn't fit, and then occasionally it boils down to just one person that says it doesn't fit. And just over the last, I don't know, handful of years or so, it just basically boils down to, Rick, can you do this? And it's like, well, let me check. And then a month goes by, and I say, Rick, can you do this? And another 2 weeks goes by. And
I'm glad you mentioned that.
This is not in any way, shape, or form an insult or a diss to Rick. It's just because life is what it is, man. And I tell you what, a couple years ago, when I was in Rick's situation with really young kids, I was that way too. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to do the things that were being presented to me, but at the same time, I knew I had these responsibilities at home that was like, dang, if I do this, it's going to cause some issues at home. And mm-hmm. so I put it off. Yeah. And, you know, and then the other guys are like, come on, man, what's up? You going to do this show or not? And I'm like, all right, I guess I've got to go ask Jen now. And so, like, you know, again, not even remotely any kind of, like, you know, disrespect or diss at all. But it is what it is. And so the last couple of years, it's been a thing where Rick has not been able to participate in a lot of the things that we've had opportunities to do. And dating back a couple years to when we played with Screeching Weasel in New York City, like back when we were like a full-time touring recording band,
yeah,
getting an opportunity to play with Screeching Weasel would have been like, yeah, here's my left nut, take it. Like, sure. Yes, please, right? And so, you know, now it's like, okay, well, let me see what we got going on. And so you really want to try your best to make it work, but in the same breath, you don't want to turn it down because that opportunity might not raise its head again. Sure. So if you've got the opportunity and you can bring in another person, whether it be a guitar player or a drummer or whoever, then you do it. And that's what we did. And it was with some random guy that we've only played one show with on drums ever. And so we did that show. And, you know, and another show comes up and we do another one with another drummer and et cetera, et cetera. So at this point, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, do you feel like, you know, the Huntingtons always existed on recordings as you, Cliff, and Mike for several records.
All of them actually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then you had your second guitarists, but like you always had Mike on the recordings, but then you'd never see him, or for a long time, or when you guys started getting really busy, it seemed like he wasn't a part of that, and then it seemed like Rick was kind of like the next kind of permanent, semi-permanent drummer. You had a lot of revolving people coming in and out, but what I'm wondering is, do you guys feel like right now, like there is core people like that you can't really or shouldn't replace? Like, do you feel like now that you guys have gotten past a lot of that, like having kids and stuff, like now do you feel like it's important to have Cliff and have Josh and, you know what I mean? Like, or is it just sort of like, hey, if Cliff can't make it, so what? We got someone else. how do you feel about that?
Oddly enough and interestingly enough, like the approach that we've taken over the last couple years has been, for lack of a better way of putting it, a more mature approach, where even as recently as back in September, we played in Baltimore at the Auto Bar with Teenage Bottle Rocket, and it was a Thursday night. Cliff told us in advance, look, I can't do this. Like, the club contacted us and said, hey, Teenage Bottle Rocket's coming through. We want you to open the show. Is that cool? We'd never really played with them before. They're a modern band that plays our style of music. It would be a cool thing to do. They know us. We know them. It would be awesome. When's this opportunity going to come again? Mm-hmm. Shoot it out to everybody. Everybody's cool with doing it except Cliff, because it's a Thursday night. He lives 3.5 hours away. He's got to go to work the next morning, et cetera, et cetera. Can't do it. Okay, well, what do we want to do? Do we want to play it as a three-piece? So we shoot the idea over to Andy, who was in the band, you know, 12, 15 years ago, at the same time Rick joined the band, who lives in Canada, nonetheless. hey, Andy, any possible way you'd want to kind of make a road trip and come down and play the show. If not, that's cool. We'll probably do it as a three-piece, but if you want to jump in and play guitar, that's cool. And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. And he drove down from Canada and he played the show. So, like, at this point, it's almost like a family. Like, we've had so many people in this band, and a lot of people came and left on bad terms at the time, but since then, we've all sort of matured a bit, grown up a bit, said, God, that was really stupid that we ended that way. You know, we're all different people now. And so if anybody really from our past kind of was to pop in and say, hey, I'm available to do this or I'm available to do that, we'd be totally open to it. And it's more or less just like we've got 20 people or so that have been in this band that we could draw from to say, hey, you want to come do this? Cool. You know, let's do it. I don't think at this point there's really like because we don't really do enough to say we're a band at this point.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe in 2016 that'll change and we'll start playing more shows and we'll start being more active. I don't necessarily know that that's the case, but if that happens to be the case, then maybe we sit down and say, "Hey, these are the core dudes." And we can bring other people in as needed, but at least we got to have these dudes, I don't know, so people know who it is. But, I don't, you know, at this point it's like whoever can do it and wants to do it, if we trust them, if we know that they're good, that's what we do.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. When you just did. You just
can
did.
Can I ask another one? Oh, wait. Can
you
I ask?
You just did.
Can I ask two?
Stop. You're trapped.
Can I ask two more questions? Ha-ha!
Oh, he got it. He got it in. He slipped it right in there.
You broke the...
I just broke the internet. when you say you have a guy come down from Canada, I have to ignorantly ask, where are you located? Like, where are the Huntingtons based out of as of right now?
Well, see, that's just the funny thing. We have not been based out of anywhere since about 1999. Okay. Ever since that point, we've lived in any number of locations.
Okay.
And so currently, I live in the suburbs of Baltimore.
Oh.
Josh, our guitarist, lives in Ocean City, Maryland, which is about 3 hours away from me.
Okay.
Cliff lives in Virginia, and he's about 3.5 hours away. Rick's
so
up
it's
near
Maryland-ish.
You. What's that?
So it's like Maryland-ish.
It's Maryland-ish. It's the tri-state area. Yeah.
Maryland-ish.
And, you know, Rick's up in PA. Chris, the guy that's been playing drums with us for a while now, that's on tour with Josh and CJ in Europe, he's about 40 minutes south of me, so he's probably the localist.
Oh, wow, okay.
Guy.
Someone got there.
Yeah, nice. Someone's kind of close. Yeah, so I mean, we're spread out a lot, and we have been for a long time.
Jeez,
yeah.
And that's what makes it easy and difficult to just sort of grab people as needed. You know, mm-hmm. It's like
sure.
Yeah.
When you do a handful of shows a year, you practice once or twice, and you go do them.
Right.
That's it.
I would be foolish if I did not bring up the fact that the Huntingtons, the one time the three of us were in the same room together,
yeah,
was when you guys played my bedroom in 1996.
Yep,
for my graduation party, my high school graduation, that happened.
I saw the Huntingtons with three people, and Steven was one of them.
Whatever, there was more than three. It was like at least 10.
Oh, okay.
I just thought it was funny. Show. We were Sweet 16 was out on cassette and CD, and we had a merch booth set up in my bedroom. I just remember thinking how funny that was. It was like, it was very, very beginnings days of your band. But that was pretty cool. I have a video of that. I should upload that and get it to you.
I think I may have a video of it too, and I mean even without the video, I clearly remember doing that. Like,
yeah, it was good times.
Yeah.
Do you remember his good
beginnings of our?
Do you remember his very handsome cousin being there too? That was me.
I do. Well, my memory is not that clear. I do not remember that, but
that hurts a little.
Not even Jen could help it with that memory.
Not gonna lie, a little painful. That's okay. All right.
Yeah, people don't, I don't think, the people that know me and what I do musically, I don't think they often refer to me as a collaborator of the Honeytons and Mike Holt, but we have crossed paths many times in the past. You know, I've done some vocals on your albums, and we tried to do a band together. It was short-lived.
That was good stuff, man.
Yes, it is.
What, you hit him at the wrong time in his life.
Yeah.
Back to the whole kid thing.
When we circle back around to the whole idea of, are you available to do this? that was at a time when I was very unavailable to do a lot of things. I had just had our first kid. We were on the cusp of having the second. And now that they're older, for me, I don't want to say it's easier. But it's easier. I'll just go ahead and say it. It's just easier. You know, when they get older, it's easier to be able to do things.
Steven, he's available. Ask him, Steven. Ask him, he's available.
And what's funny about the whole, like, you know, rewinding back to when we, you know, tried to do this band, which I got to admit, I thought it was freaking cool, man. I thought we did some cool stuff. I still have two amplifiers somewhere buried in Rick's basement.
I left there
the last time we practiced together, whenever that was, they are still there.
10 years ago.
From that time.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, well, Rick sold those for diapers and baby formula.
I think he did.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, not to say anything negative, but I'd be totally fine if he did that. Like, if he sold it for, you know, to go buy CDs or to whatever, that'd be a little disappointing, but baby diapers and formula, that'd be okay. That'd be all right.
Yeah. Well, I remember our very last practice, we went to get some food, and you guys told us you were pregnant for the second time, and that was like the big announcement. Yeah. It was kind of like, yeah, I think this is going to stop.
Yeah, man.
I remember that day.
It's a chain. I'll tell you. You know now.
I know. I started a lot later than you guys.
It's a life-changing kind of thing. And it was funny because, like, when we talked, yesterday or whatever about doing this, and I kind of start going through all the things in my mind that might come up that we might be talking about, and I start thinking about, like, back at the days of when Huntington's were actively practicing. You know, they were rehearsing on the weekends, for shows or to play new material, whatever. And we get together on Saturdays. And we block off Saturday. Saturday is our practice day. That's just it. You know, there's no kids involved. Mm-hmm. We're going to practice on Saturday. And how silly it was, because I'd drive an hour to get the Cliffs. We would bullshit for an hour and a half, just about whatever. Just sit around and talk. And then we'd actually play music for maybe an hour and a half. And then we'd travel around to all the record stores in the area. And at the time, Newark, there was probably three or four really good record stores in that area. And we would spend 4 hours just perusing used CDs and just whatever might have come in the 6 days since the last time we were there. It was just like, I spent so much time basically saying that I was going to band practice, but really only spending about an hour and a half doing that, and about four or five going to record stores and just basically doing nothing.
Sounds like the perfect band practice to me.
Sounds awesome. 20 years ago it was, and like now it's like, my gosh, I couldn't even remotely think of spending that much time doing something like that. So, it's crazy. And back in June, Jen and I did an anniversary dinner downtown in Fells Point, and we went to a cool little tapas restaurant, which was right around the corner from a record store I used to go to all the time. And after the restaurant, we're like, oh, I'm gonna duck in here real quick. Gosh, I haven't been here in years. And I was in and out, and like I was in and out in six, seven minutes. The thrill of being in a physical store like that was just gone. I looked around. I'm like, this is basically what I remember it being. But I'm done. I'm ready to go.
Like, can't justify spending the money anymore.
That's a part of it, and a part of it is. I don't have the drive to just dig through all these discs anymore. Like, I mean, literally, we'd practice every weekend back then, and we would do the same stores every Saturday. Only 6 days separated it. So how much new stuff could they have possibly gotten in 6 days? And we would spend hours scouring through those bins, and, like, we mostly probably came across the same stuff every week.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, nah, just it's just gone, man.
You're not a fan of the like the actual record stores now, like records and flipping through vinyl and all that stuff. It's not a thing you do.
Nah, man. I haven't bought or cared about a new release in years.
Yeah.
Years and years and years. Like
it's really extreme now. It's either you're really into it or you're really not. There's no real in between anymore. I find.
Yeah, I mean access is the key and. You know, since that time, the ability to just access whatever you want at any given moment is just like, you know, I used to go to the store and spend $20-25 on some Cure import CD from Japan. Oh, yeah. You know, that had like 2 live songs on it that I didn't have on some other import from Japan that I may have bought at some point. And it's like, I can just go online and get that stuff now, man. I don't need to like.
Yeah, right. Right.
I don't need to spend so much time looking for it, and
yeah.
More access you have to it, we're cycling right back to the topic of just oversaturation, and you have it, and you don't. It's not as special as it was before.
Right. What's interesting though is that as we're saying this, I'm thinking though on the literal subject we're talking about, like. You know, it's interesting that in a world we live in that's so oversaturated with music, and now you can stream music like at the you know, like you said instantly anything. It's interesting that there is a resurgence of like vinyl records and stuff like that, and it kind of points out that there is more to this story than is it oversaturated or not. You know what I mean? Like I feel like. When you go into the record store when you were back in the day when you were band practicing, there was something else that was drawing you there other than just the simple fact of you were interested in having a CD collection full of CDs or whatever. And I feel like that, there's something missing there. Like there's like a music love of just being surrounded by music, whether you know, people that like collect records and stuff like that, I think they do that because there's something tangible still that they're enjoying, where if you don't have that part of it, it's not as tangible to just stream Spotify, you know what I mean? So it's like there's more to the story, I think, of this oversaturation thing. I think in some ways there's a lot of things that it doesn't matter, but then there's like as musicians, you know, it's interesting. We still have inspiration to do music in one form or another. You know, you guys playing the Huntington shows occasionally, that's still inspiration. You know, it's still a part of you that's going, you know, I love doing this. But yet it's so different now. It's not like, you know, it's not as magical, I guess. But you know what I mean? And there's something interesting about that, I think. You know. Hello? Is anybody there?
Yeah. For those of us that can appreciate it, I think it's a completely lost what's the word I'm looking for? It's a totally lost concept on a younger generation. Sound like an old man now, but I mean, my kids are like records, CDs. Like, why would you have such a bulky, dumb item? You know, they don't. It's not even real to them. I mean, they were born. My twins were born in 2002. Texting has always existed to them. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a different. It just makes me feel like. And it's actually happening now. I'm becoming that old guy that was like, you kids have no idea what it was like to look for a show with no GPS. You know what I mean? And it's true. And I just feel like the having a physical anything is kind of a dated – I don't agree with it, but I think it's viewed as a dated old prehistoric kind of a concept. Yeah. And that's a bummer because you guys interviewed Seth W. on your podcast, and he was a huge RDO fan, and RDO just went, we're done. that $5 a month, $10 a month you were paying and everything, you built your playlist for all this time and everything. Yep, that's gone now. Okay. I guess I have to go do something else now. Like what I never liked about streaming was you're still depending on somebody else. I'm cool with digitizing your CD and your vinyl collection and sticking it in your pocket because it's easier than carrying a record player and two speakers around. But the whole, like, you have to pay into this every month, and now all of a sudden this artist doesn't want their stuff online anymore. Oh, okay, you can't have that now. I always felt like there's people. I'm still not in control. Just because I have all these options doesn't mean that I'm. You know what I mean? That only
really works for the most common denominator too. You know, like people like me,
Mike,
I have a really weird, obscure taste.
Bored.
What's that?
Mike and Jen left. They're so bored.
No, I feel like I've dominated the conversation, so I'm letting other people. I want to let other people speak.
You're okay. The guest. You're the guest.
Yeah, we asked you.
No. I'm just. Please.
Let me ask you this.
Your thought, please.
This is where I was going with this, though, Mike. Are you excited at all about making music right now in your life? Is that part of you still there? Where you're like, is there, like, for me, like, always comes and goes. It pops up, and it's like, man, I really need to write a song. What's that?
I hope he says no.
No, I'm just wondering. He can say no if that's how he feels. I'm curious because, to me, it's like a lot of work to do a gig. It's a lot of, for me, it's a lot of work to get everybody together and play, you know, unless it's something that's driving you still. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
And I will somewhat appease Travis and say no. The idea of, okay, so I'll back up a second. So we've been talking about, like, you know, the media that we use to listen to music and how it's, you know, obviously changed from when we were younger to now, all that, and I'm totally agreeing with what you guys are saying, and I think a big part of it is, and I don't know when this happened, maybe even back when we were actually still buying, or you guys probably still do buy records, but I don't buy records anymore, but you know, it shifted from a desire to listen to an entire record to a desire to just listen to a song. And nowadays, a lot of what gets put out is a song, and it may be on a record, but kids and young people and people in general tend to not really care as much about the whole record as they do about that one song. And that's kind of what drives radio, even though radio is kind of a crappy thing, and it's been a crappy thing for a long time, but, you know, it's just about that one song, and if the rest of your album is terrible, well, who cares, because you're going to sell a shitload of that one song on iTunes or wherever you're going to push it. And I've been slightly just sort of, I don't know what the right word is, but, I mean, I like you said, Steve, my inspiration comes and goes when it comes to, like, generating new stuff. I'll sit down and in a day I'll pump out a handful of things that I think could be the starting points of new songs, and I'll record them on my iPhone. I'll sit down with a guitar and I'll just bang them out on my iPhone real quick and just record snippets, and then I won't revisit them for 6 months. Like it'll
yeah, I have that.
I won't come back to it for that long. So if I ever or we ever decide to sit down and write a new record, it's going to take, like, some really crazy thing to happen to make me want to do that. I don't know. I mean,
so that's not on the chopping block, then.
Well, I mean,
let's get that question out of the way.
when we all get together and talk, it's like, man, it'd be super cool to do a new record, and we all have ideas, and I have ideas, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? Recording a new record would be awesome, but that takes work, and it takes time, which is something I don't have a lot of, and it takes practice, which takes time, which is something I don't have a lot of,
and eventually it'll take money. Someone's going
to eventually it'll take money, and eventually it'll take a desire to whether or not, you know, can we gauge the opinion of the people who still seem to care about this style of music, and us in particular, do they really want this? And if they don't, is it worth my time to write a record? And is it worth our time to record it? And is it worth our money to put it out to appease 100 people? I don't know. Because personally, it's like, I'm not going to really get anything out of it. If I'm being honest, I'm not going to get anything out of it. Like, I'm long past the point of caring whether any new people like what I do. Like, back when the Huntingtons were a band and we were touring and we were trying to get an audience, I cared that I was reaching an audience. I cared that I was growing an audience and that new people, and if we played a show and 100 people showed up and 10 new people were fans, that meant a lot to me. And it may sound, well, put whatever label on it you want, I don't care about that. Like, that's, I don't care about that anymore. Like, if I'm gonna put out new music, it's gonna be because I want to do it and because my bandmates want to do it. Right on. And if people like it, awesome. If they don't, I don't care. Like, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Right,
like,
right, yeah.
And that's a big part of like how we choose our shows now. It's not about whether or not we're gonna gain new fans, because none of us really give a shit about gaining new fans. It's about whether or not it's gonna be fun and enjoyable for us to do, and whether it fits with our lives as they currently are. Mm-hmm. That's it. Don't care about
I'm
new people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to all the new potential new people out there that might like the band. I don't care about you.
Tell the front of the Weezer's why you're doing audio
feed. What's that?
What was the plan afterwards? Like,
oh yeah. So the audio, you know, cycling way back to us playing audio feed. Mm-hmm. A good portion of that was prior to even doing that. Like, we're like, hey, Jen and I were like, what are we going to do for vacation this year?
Huh.
Like, well, maybe we should do like a cross country vacation where we take the kids and we show them the Grand Canyon and we show them all these areas of the country that, you know, I never got to see when I was a kid, or Jen got to see when she was a kid, and just sort of experience different areas, different cultures and so forth. And we're like, well, hell, Illinois is halfway across the country. If we drive out there and play this show, we're halfway there. We might as well just leave from there and go do this cross country trip. So,
I thought you were gonna say, oh, Jen, for our vacation, we're gonna drive to Audio Feed and do a Huntington's concert.
We're gonna spend 3 days watching punk rock and folk rock and acoustic.
Yeah.
We live in Cornerstone. Totally bitchin' vacation. Yeah, no. Like, the plan at the moment is to drive the audio, you know, to play a show or two out there and play audio feed and then dump our van somewhere in Chicago and take a train across the country and, like, go see the country. And
that's cool, man.
And sounds like that's, a blast. That's more where our heads are focused now than, you know, hey, can we gain new fans? I mean, if people come to Audio Feed who have never seen us before and they like us, I don't want to say that's not cool. That's cool. But that's not my goal. Right. And it's not in any way, shape, or form why I will continue to play shows.
How old are your kids?
My kids are 11, 9, and soon to be 7.
What a rad story, too. Like, on for vacation, I had to go halfway across the country. My dad played this huge punk festival with his band, and then we hopped in a train.
Oh, like, no. It was not rad.
Killer
story. It's not rad. Our 11-year-old was like, how long are we going to have to be there?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, just to give you an example. Okay, so, but just to give a quick background example, 2 months ago, we went up to New York City. This is one of those things where we were like, okay, we're given this opportunity to open for C.J. Ramone in New York at his 50th birthday party.
Cool.
And it was also a benefit for an organization called Autism Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the money and the proceeds were going to go to that charity. And so there was no financial gain for us. We were going to spend money to go there, which we said, you know what, all things considered, this is what we want to do. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so we made a weekend out of it. We took the kids up, and it's like, they're there, and they're like, so when's this going to be over? And there was only like 3 bands or 4 bands that played, one of which was an all-kid band, which I think the oldest kid was like 14, and it was like a neat like Rush cover band of like all these little kids who were really freaking good, by the way. And
you
so
have
I
to
thought
be
that
to cover rest.
I thought that that would like get them engaged in what was happening. Oh, there's kids up there that are just basically a couple years older than me, and they're like totally kicking ass. And now, so when's this going to be over? And I'm like, do you realize you're at CJ Ramone's 50th birthday? They're cutting a cake. They're cutting a cake back there for like a Ramone, and you're like complaining about when we're going to leave. So they don't really grasp things.
Well, so not yet. They don't get it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's understandable.
Am I back yet?
You are back.
You sound pretty good, yeah.
I just wanted to interject. I was afraid to because I was afraid it was going to ruin what you were saying. But I was going to say, you know, when they get older, you know, they've got to at some point look back on what you've done and go, okay, that's kind of a big deal, like that he crossed paths with Ramon. Members and stuff like
even if your kids are totally not into punk or they're
exactly,
not into music,
yeah.
They're going to be in a conversation where they're like, Ramones are the best punk band in the world. No, they're not. Yeah, they are. I was at CJ Ramone's 50th birthday.
Yeah, there's going to be a time
what?
Where I think they're going to.
No, you weren't.
That.
Bullshit. Yeah, I was. Dude, yeah. My dad was in the Huntingtons. No way. Like, even if he's like a total straight laced dubstep guy, that's still going to come up somewhere. It has to.
That's kind of too ingrained in culture and history.
Right.
To not be cool later on.
it's just a standard thing with kids that
exactly,
in no way, shape, or form do they ever want to admit that anything that their parents do are kind of cool. Like,
right.
Yeah. No, my parents are my parents. I cannot admit that they're cool in any way. Like, that's just, and I would have felt the same way about my parents when I was a kid. So it's not like some alien thing. And on that note, like, we don't, like, influence the kids to listen to any, like, you listen to whatever you want. And
right, yeah.
Luckily, at this point, our oldest, Petra, has sort of been, you know, gearing herself towards music that's, on the most part, acceptable to myself.
Sure. How much, but how much have you turned into, like, someone who listens to, like, kids' music?
Oh, dude, I listen to pop music like crazy.
You're into, like, what's her face, 1989?
Like Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, thank you. I was trying to get her name.
Yeah, I love like me that. Some Taylor Swift.
Really?
Do you like her because Ryan Adams covered her, or do you like her for her?
Oh, gosh, no. Yeah, I mean, the Ryan Adams thing was but I listened to it the day it came out, and I haven't revisited it since.
It cut off. What did you say it was?
I said I listened to the Ryan Adams cover record like the day he released it, like the full thing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting, but I haven't revisited it since.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cool idea that you can sort of enjoy, but not like put up there with his own stuff.
Yeah. Not something I'll pop in and say, man, I really want to hear that 1989 cover record that Ryan Adams did.
Exactly.
Present state, we're completely happy.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I'm sorry. I always tend to convolute, like...
There you go with that doom and gloom ending again.
No, yeah, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's just like...
I'm
darkness into the conversation.
This is one of my biggest pet peeves with Mike.
Oh, I love it.
He takes what could have been like a one or two sentence answer and has to lead up to like a 10-minute explanation So if you say favorite food, well, this day, on Fridays, I tend to really enjoy getting Chinese.
I love it.
But on Sunday nights, you know, simplicity and the fact that I don't want to really cook or make a big, mess in the kitchen, I say we just order pizza. But then the rest of the week, we can do crock pots and other things and really delve into our culinary skills. So, you know, if I had to really choose, it would be Chinese from the local place. It couldn't have just been like, hey, you know, I really enjoy Chinese food, and my favorite is General Tso's. I mean, it has to be like this long, drawn-out explanation, like I'm doing now.
You're really quite terrible, Mike.
two points.
2 points. Okay.
Wow. And number one.
See, here we go.
Comes another 45-minute diatribe, right?
No. Guilty is charged. I love words. I love words. I love expressing myself.
I will say this. He has been the saving grace of being able to edit my papers correctly through
just slide
my
over
a degree. Then when I finished my undergraduate, and now I'm in graduate school. So Mike has definitely done wonders with that. So he loves words. Yeah.
If we can agree to have Jen just be quiet for 90 seconds.
Okay.
I'm not the one who needs to be quiet.
I'll wrap this all up.
Got it.
As Jen just said,
I love it.
I love words. I love language. I admittedly express myself in way more words than are necessary. I just love using language. And because of that, like she said, I edit her papers, and I am very, very particular about, hey, you repeated yourself here. You said this same thing here. You did this there, and I make her papers better, and she just admitted that.
Mm. Well, okay. That's good.
I love talking, and I love language.
Now you forgot your point.
Holy crap, I forgot my second point.
Because you got so
this is amazing.
She derailed me so hard.
I was being completely quiet. What are you talking about?
I forgot my second.
We were talking about favorite dinner on Friday nights with public schools.
And you said you had 2 points, and you stuck up two fingers, and then you said, "I love words," and then there was like 90 minutes of
words. That your wife confessed that you helped her.
Yeah, hopefully no one that watches your podcast or listens to your podcast is in her classes or is a teacher.
I did not say that you write my papers. You just help edit them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. For the record, disclaimer.
I tend to be long-winded with my responses. I admit that.
That's a guilty charge.
And I'll be honest. I'm not gonna.
Some of that may actually have.
Holy moly! Maybe Jen's long-winded with her responses.
I was actually going to give her a compliment.
I guess 90 seconds is up. Oh my.
Yep, it is. I was going to say that maybe this long-winded and his love for words is what helped him write over 100 Huntington songs.
Maybe. I don't know. But
maybe. It's a good theory.
I'm just going to
stop. What should be the concept of the next Huntington's record should be your love of words? It should be an educational album.
He's always talked about writing a concept album.
I like talking a lot. I like talking and using language the way it's supposed to be used, and I hate when people misuse it. And there you go. I'm done.
He's done.
Go ahead. Wow. Next.
I have a question. What do you do for a living?
Yeah, I was just about to ask about that. Maybe they just opened another can.
Okay, so my job...
In 20 words or less.
Just a simple answer, man.
Just kidding.
You're killing me. All right, so I work for the Department of Defense. And there is a local Army base here that I work for, an engineering team. And I am a supervisor of a group of people who document designs of equipment that is primarily based in chemical and biological detection. And that being...
I'm seeing Trav's face right now.
Are you kidding me?
See?
No.
You should have been named Wardy Huntington.
No, the singer from the Huntingtons is Really? Wow.
Yeah. Now,
how'd you get into that? Was it on Craigslist and you just answered it or what?
Like, no, I got into this long before Craigslist. This April will be my 20th year of doing this.
Wow, man.
I was in college for computer-aided drafting and design in my second semester of doing that when my the head of that particular department came to me and said, hey, there's this contracting position up at this Army base where you can set your own hours, basically, because you're in college, and they'll pay you to do computer drafting work while you're going through college. And so I applied, and I got accepted into that program in 1996. And ever since that point, I've sort of worked my way through different ranks and through different promotions, so to speak, and I'm still there now, and I'm now a supervisor of the entire computer-aided drafting group that works
there.
That's
awesome.
Wow.
That's wild, man. Yep. So that's what I do.
I don't know how to follow up with anything, so, okay.
It's not really not that big of a deal. it's a job, and some days it's awesome, and some days it sucks.
Yeah, one of those jobs.
You know.
Are you, do you enjoy it?
Do I enjoy it?
I mean, are you in one of those positions where you're like, well, it's a really good situation, but kind of miserable with it? Or do you actually really enjoy doing what you do?
It's never a situation where it's not a really good situation, but it does come and go where I enjoy it and I don't.
Sure.
And a lot of that has to do with being bound by the politics of the day. And being a government employee, being a Department of Defense employee, you are bound by certain regulations. You are stuck in what would appear to be ridiculous situations when it comes to jumping through hoops to do things that regular people in regular jobs would do with ease.
Yeah.
Because you're in a government position, you've got to have 17,000 people sign off on something before it actually, like, you know, it actually goes through. So there's a lot of frustration with, my gosh, in a normal situation, this would be totally easy, but in my situation, it's, like, completely insane. But you balance that with a lot of really amazing perks. I get paid really well for what I do, and I get a lot of days off. Like, I get every federal holiday off paid. I mean, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah,
that is pretty freaking cool.
My job is flexible with, you know, hey, my kid has something at school this afternoon. I got to go. I want to go see it. Okay, cool, go. Whereas if you're working for a company whose bottom line is profit, which my job has nothing to do with profit whatsoever, but if you were working for a company that profit was the bottom line, they would basically say, you know, no, you can't go. But we don't profit. My group that I work for, the goal is to break even at the end of the year. Zero out everything. So they're cool with you going and doing things for your family. And
that's really awesome, man.
That's great. Yeah, really.
And if you do the math, and I said 20 years this April, if you do the math, that means I started in 1996, which would have been really around the time when the band kind of kicked off and started touring and doing all these things. So in the same breath, they were totally cool with me saying, hey, I'm going to be gone for 3 months. I'll see you in 3 months. And they let me do that. And so, you know, I would go on tour and come back, and I'd still have a job, which was pretty freaking cool.
That's insane.
I love that. Yeah, I'm always curious what the musician folks do in the off time, because I hear so many, like, I washed every dish in every restaurant that I could in the whole town, to the point where I've actually gone back to the restaurant for the second time to get a job back. And those other guys and girls that just find this kind of a job where it's like, yeah, go ahead, you're good. And I'm always fascinated by that. I think
it's amazing.
I think it's a cool story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that being said, what was it? 2001. I was working at the same job. I was a contractor at the time. I was not a government employee. I was working through an outside company that placed me in my position as a contractor. And this was when Cliff left the band, and Andy came in and Rick came in. So it was myself, Andy, Rick, and Josh. And we were like, you know what? We should go full steam ahead with this. We should tour constantly. Like, just let's just do it, you know. We're still young. None of us have kids. Some of us are married. But we should just do it.
Actually,
it was probably just me that was married, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all right, well, up until this point, my job has been cool with letting me go sporadically for periods of time. But I don't necessarily know that they would let me go for 9 or 10 months out of the year. So I went to my boss and I said, hey, look, you know, my band is doing fairly well, and we've got some pretty cool touring opportunities. I'm super sorry, but I got to quit. Like, you've been awesome to me. Everything's been rad. You've been great, but if I don't go do this and try it, I'll regret it, and I'll look back on it and say, why didn't I try, and, you know, all those sorts of things. And he's like, all right, man, go do it. You know, cool, go do it. And so I actually quit that job. And I quit that job in July of 2000.
Actually, that's not exactly how it worked. They were letting you work on the road.
Well, that was prior. Yeah.
And then you quit.
Yeah, I was working from the road. I was doing some work from the road. But then it got to a point where it was like, you know, I'm gone way too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said, I quit. And that was like July of 2001. And we set out on a tour in September of 2001. And a couple days into the tour in Dallas, Texas, we got robbed. And
I remember that.
Everything from our trailer that was worth anything to us got stolen. And we still had a month and a half worth of dates left to do. and we continued that month and a half worth of dates, just, you know, nickel and diming it, you know, continuing on. But needless to say, at the end of that tour, I came home and I humbled myself and said, I'm going to call my boss and say, good Lord, that was a stupid thing to do. So I called him back up and said, hey, this is what happened. Shit out of luck. What do you say about hiring me back? And he hired me back. And not only did he hire me back, but he promoted me, because in the time that I was gone, the guy that was my boss quit.
Wow, man.
You would have been next in line to take this job. So if you're serious about coming back to work here, not only can you come back to work here, but you can take the guy's job that was ahead of you. And I did that, and I've been with him ever since.
Awesome.
That is a crazy awesome story.
Now that's a good story, yep.
Freaking just good fortune with that, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's like, geez, I mean, my boss is super cool, and he's always been super cool about basically everything. And to this day, I kid you not, I'm not making this up, I'm not bullshitting you, I'm not bloviating, I'm not exaggerating. When he brings a high-ranking military official, general, whatever, through our area, and he introduces them to me, the very first thing he says is, this is Mike Holt. He's the supervisor of our what I do is called tech data. He's the supervisor of our tech data department, but he's a rock star, and he toured the world, and he always gets it wrong. He always screws it up, and you know, I'm not going to sit there and correct him in front of a freaking 2 or 3 star general. Sure. I'm not going to do that, but he tells them that I toured the world with moans. That's what he tells them, which is completely not true, like on any level whatsoever. And but he every time he tells the story, he exaggerates it a little bit more.
That's great.
And of course,
he's
you know,
excited for you, man, because you're in his place, and you're like this guy who's done this crazy thing. And so
just let him go and see how far he goes.
Let him have fun with it, man. He's making this.
General, meet Mike Holt, lead singer of the Rolling Stones.
By the time I retire, that's going to be the story. This is Mike Holt. He filled in for Keith Jagger on the Rolling Stones. That's going to be what it is. But I let him go and. The exaggerations definitely exaggerations, but
Mike
they're not.
Came over here and he was on Ed Sullivan. You gotta just give it to him.
Yeah, exactly. So I let him go, and it impresses the people that come through. And because you know, in my office, I have CDs framed and hanging on the wall. I have things memorabilia type things that are kind of there to just sort of say, hey, I did this.
That's
and,
awesome.
He loves to point that out, and I let him go with it. You know, he knows somewhere in his brain the real story, but he just exaggerates it every single time.
And love it. That's hilarious. Awesome.
Well, you know, I find the real story to be pretty impressive, though.
Well, yeah, I mean,
he did a lot of crazy stuff. I mean,
a lot of the reason he exaggerates too is, and I don't know if you guys know this, is back in I guess it's been about 9 or 10 years ago. In my job, I do a rather boring job. Okay, I document designs for the Army, which is basically drawings and documentation. However, there's a team that's a part of the group I work with that does these really cool like computer animations and like training animations and really kind of like cool. Almost kind of gaming kind of things that Army guys can get their hands on and sort of like learn how to use equipment. Right. And part of that is experiencing this new technology. And so they came to me in about 2006 and said, hey, you know, we know you have this background in music. Would you be interested in writing like background music for these animations that we're doing? And these training videos that we're doing, like we're gonna ship them out to soldiers. We're gonna tell them how to use this piece of equipment. But these young guys really need this background, energetic kind of music to kind of engage them and kind of like make them really care about what they're watching. And I'm like, well, sure, that sounds cool, but how am I gonna do that? And they're like, well, quote up and estimate up what it would cost to buy some stuff. For you to like, get some recording gear in house and blah 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 and this, that, and the other. So I did that, and they ended up buying me all kinds of cool recording stuff.
And dude, it's the government. They're used to paying $1,400 for a hammer. I mean, you really could have took this somewhere.
You are not kidding. And dude, okay, you just brought up an amazing example, and you even said $1,400, which
I'm
is
an amazing podcast host, Mike,
which is not shy of what's happening. Like I literally a month. 2 months ago, got in a project where you guys, okay, at least Travis and probably Steven very soon, are going to be very familiar with toys that take batteries. Like, you know what that means. And a lot of times, if you have a remote control car or you have some sort of thing where you have to put the batteries in this little plastic holder and then insert it into the car or insert it into the toy, AA batteries, boom, the thing works, right? Okay, so there's this piece of equipment that's a communications piece of equipment that takes 6 AA batteries, okay? It takes 6 AA batteries, and it loads into this little holder, and it slides into the piece of equipment, and then boom, magically you can communicate with other Army people.
Okay.
The Army did not develop this piece of equipment. They contracted it out to people who are for-profit businesses. And that little battery holder that holds 6 AA batteries costs the Army $1,200 a piece.
Wow, man.
What? You just said $1,400, so you were really close. $1,200 for a little plastic thing that holds 6 AA batteries. And as you grow older and you start buying your kids remote control cars and you have these little things, remote control cars only cost like $100. I mean, or whatever they cost. They don't cost $1,200. I mean, some of them do, granted, if you really get crazy into it. But $1,200 for a freaking battery holder? That's insane.
So that is freaking ridiculous.
This particular group said, here, take this, can you guys take this and basically reverse engineer it and give us the data that we would need to go out and shop it around to get it for cheaper, because $1,200 is insane. And so that's a project that we're currently working on. I got a little derailed there with Travis's 1400.
No, yeah, that's
again I'm very worried. Okay,
that's disgusting.
Most of the time,
Mike tells me these stories, I start to like think about other things in my mind as he's speaking.
Yeah, she does. But it tends to kind of cycle back through what we were talking about earlier, where like, holy cow, like,
I'm sure that's what they were doing as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they were. I can see the side chat, so unless they have a different side chat, I'm
good. You just reminded me I had to buy batteries. I was on Amazon.
Well, don't buy them from the government, or else you're going to pay like $4 a battery.
Dude, that money has to come from somewhere. That's really gross, because we all know where that money comes from. It's me and you.
I mean,
Steven.
Yeah, well, precisely, and a huge amount of the business that my particular group does is, you know, is going back and taking things and products that outside organizations have developed and maintained for the Army for years and years and years, and saying, look, this is costing us way too much money. Can you guys take these things, give us our own internal government-owned, you know, documentation for these things so that we can build them ourselves and just not pay these ridiculous costs?
Right.
And that's a huge, huge, huge part of what I do at my job every day. And Steven asked, you know, do you like your job? Is it frustrating? You know, is it good? Is it bad? That's the good and the bad. The good and the bad is you hit these walls where it's like, oh my gosh, you see these things every once in a while that pop up that are like, holy cow, we spend an insane amount of money on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just ridiculous. And I've got to see it. I've got to see it firsthand. And
it's just
insane. It's ridiculous. And now to Jen's credit, I've completely forgotten where the hell we were going with this. Like, I don't remember where we were.
Oh, we were asking about your job, and that's where we went with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we went. I mean, Travis mentioned a $1,400.
You were actually talking about all the really cool musical equipment they bought.
Oh, gosh! Thank you, Jennifer.
That one sentence, you could have just said that, and like, which he's actually then been able to use in recording Cliff's new side project.
Sure.
I remember you had said something about having some sort of a recording access with work.
They asked you to price out how much it would cost for you to put in music in the training videos.
Thank you, Travis. We brought it all the way back around. And
this is why he makes a good professor, because he can bullshit for an hour.
I love Jen so much.
She's rough on you, dude.
She kicks me right in the nuts, right?
It just reminds me of me and Sarah, though. That's why I love.
Hey, what, we've been together how long now?
You're allowed to have criticisms, right?
And it's fine, I take it, it's fine.
What? Yeah, it's cool. I like her.
She's 22 years.
I like her, she's a spicy meatball.
Firecrackers.
In any case, I'm going to really quick wrap this segment up. I priced it out, I bought a guitar, I bought a keyboard, I bought a bass, I bought recording equipment, and I've been recording music at work for these
not for profit, so we'll put that out there.
Yeah, of course, it's for work. It's for, you know, instructional videos, different animations, different things.
That's awesome.
Army people all over the world.
He's recording music for the Army. I've never even thought of that. Can you send any of that to us?
It's actually on my. I have a link to my Facebook page to a SoundCloud site, which is exclusively stuff that I've recorded for them. Now, it's only the audio. You don't get to see the video.
Okay.
Because some of it's classified.
Send that link to us.
I will. Some of it's a little classified. But, I mean, even some of it was like, you know, walking through a town in Iraq and spotting insurgents. And I had to kind of like put this sort of Middle Eastern kind of music into it, and then just sort
Dude,
of
this build, is amazing.
I mean, build to a, like a climax, and I mean, some of it's just some of it's without seeing the video, it's really difficult to kind of grasp what it is you're listening to. But
had to make things certain lengths. And
There was one group that came to us and knew that I was the person doing this, and said, "Hey, we know you got a customized sound guy. We want an AC/DC sounding kind of soundtrack for our video. We want it to kind of sound rock and roll AC/DC." So I freaking threw together some stupid ass AC/DC sound.
Dude, you are inches away from scoring a film. Like you're right there.
That would be amazing, but here's the big issue with this, and again, I'm going to go long-winded because that's what I do. The majority of the time I get these jobs in, I don't get to see the video ahead of time because the way that our group works, we kind of work coincidentally at the same time with each other to where they say, hey, the video is going to be about 2 minutes and 45 seconds long. It starts off this way, the middle is this way, the end is this way. Go do your thing.
I see.
You really get to like see it. And at most of the time, like probably 95% of the time. So I'm just going off of how long it has to be and the general idea of what it is that I'm supposed to be representing or putting music to the background. So we're going to show how to explode some really nasty chemical stuff, and it's got to be 2 minutes long, and so do it. It's like, okay.
So cool though.
That is, yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so I'll show you guys a link to it, and there's some pretty cool stuff. I wish I could send you like video and audio, but that ain't gonna happen. you're only gonna get the audio.
That's fine. I don't want to get in trouble with the Department of Defense. That's okay.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the stuff that's like the walking through the Middle Eastern town is you might find amusing. I did what I could with that, and
cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm actually curious what you did there.
We'll be all right. Century Media sent me a link to have an album before it was released, and I was mortified. I was even scared to put it in my own computer, so I don't want to get in trouble.
I'm waiting for some government agent to jump through my window right now because I'm talking to you.
I'm not that important. I think
guys, hang on. There's somebody not at the door. It's quarter to
one. My guy has secret clearance. He doesn't have top secret.
Yeah, I have one level below the highest level, so you're safe.
That's awesome.
It's hilarious.
Well, we gotta bring this thing in for a landing.
Yeah, man. So you toured the world with the remotes. No, you toured the world. along your travels, you bumped into the Ramones, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Did a little collaboration with them a little bit, right? You got to play with them and Joey sang, right? At CBGB's, wasn't that the thing?
Yeah, we did that twice. We played with Joey at CBGB's twice.
Yeah, man.
As his backing band, and that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say along with what you're doing now, which is pretty awesome, you got that whole back, that whole timeline of what you've done. I mean, it's pretty awesome. I mean, you got to do a lot of cool stuff throughout your life, and you guys did some really good records. And looking back on it, what's some of the favorite work you did? I want to close out on that because I'm going to play some of your music during the show, and I want to I have my own personal favorites of your songs, but what is stuff you're proud of the most musically?
Well, as far as recording goes, I would say the two records that I'm most fond of looking back on would be Get Lost and Songs in the Key of You. I think both of them had a special kind of moment in that particular time. And it stood the test of time.
Those are good records for sure. High School Rock's my favorite. But I think you did hit some special kind of peaks with those records too. Get Lost is kind of like your angry record. I always refer to that as like your dark album. But
Yeah,
Songs in the Key of You was really good. That was a really solid one from you guys, for sure. And then you guys followed that up with was that the self-titled one that was next?
After Songs in the Key of You would be the self-titled record, yeah, which was, I mean, honestly put, we were approached by a very kind of small independent label that said, hey, do you guys want to do one more record? And this was after Cliff left the band, and thought about it a little bit, said sure, and I kind of just wrote the whole thing, sent it off to the guys, everybody learned it, we practiced it a couple times and recorded it. So it was probably one of the least, get together and flesh it out records that we did. You know, it was sort of, here's the songs, learn them kind of thing. So, I mean, there's definitely points on that that I really like. I kind of tried to do my best to kind of like write the lyrics around that as, hey, this is it. This is the last one.
Totally.
And try to make that kind of obvious in a lot of the lyrics, but who knows what the future brings. But you know, that was, you know, 10-11 years ago. I'd be not a man of my word if I went without saying this really quickly. I had just a very interesting thing, because the last time that we were in Europe, we went to Europe twice, and the last time that we toured there, the internet was very obviously a thing. It was very certainly a thing. But the connection and the ability to correspond with people at home was very different than it is now. And so Josh and Chris are there now with CJ, doing CJ Ramon shows for the next 2 weeks. And I sent them a message earlier and said, hey, I'm going to do a podcast tonight, and anything you want me to kind of throw in there, you know, from the road, from Europe with CJ Ramon, any kind of cool stories or whatever. And which was really neat, because, you know, back when we did that, that would not have been a thing to just text somebody and say, hey, how's Europe going?
Like, it's just, yeah, right, right.
Chris wrote back and said, well, the only thing I can say right now is that I'm really surprised at how many basic cable channels in Germany show full-on porn. Like, just...
Oh, weird.
Porn to the nth degree in Germany on basic cable channels. I'm like, you know what? I will... If that's what you want me to say, I'm going to say that. Like, I don't know why that would come to mind as being, like, the best or most appropriate thing to say. Being in
Europe. Who was the one that said this?
What's that?
Who was the one that said this?
Chris, the drummer, our current drummer here.
That's
is
so funny.
He's over there with them, and Josh has already sent me pictures. Hey Mike, you remember this venue? And he sent me pictures of the venue, and I'm like, oh man, I do remember that venue. And sadly enough, I remember that venue because of reasons that I don't want to disclose on your podcast. But
right on. Fair enough, man.
Yeah, it's just really cool, because
glory,
like,
days of rock and roll.
And there's just no, it's just crazy to think that back when we did this, I had to call my parents with like a calling card the second time we went to Europe and say, send me medicine, because all the medicine here sucks. And like, I have this terrible cold.
Well,
and
it wasn't
need...
that it sucked, you couldn't buy it.
Yeah, you couldn't buy it. It was like, please,
yeah.
Like, send me the quickest way you can, send me some, like, Dayquil and NyQuil, and, like, because I'm sick and I can't, you know, I'm having a terrible time on this tour. And it was just crazy, like, the difference in just being able to really quickly just shoot someone a text message or...
What you need is some pornography.
If only I would have had the access to the pornography, yeah.
But my throat hurts.
There's a cure for that.
Yeah,
I have flu-like symptoms. Ah, just watch this porn. Oh, man.
Wow. Well, now that we're at a nosedive, thanks
for the weird note. It's completely irrelevant to the close of the show, but I needed to fit that in there.
What a weird note. No, that's good. That's funny. Well, thanks for being on, man. Both of you.
Both of you.
Yes, you. Yeah, this. Yeah, and Jen's just sort of smiling at me like, ha ha ha.
Now she's gonna get all quiet and not. Yeah.
Okay. Keep you in check.
So yeah.
No, it's been fun, man. I really appreciate you coming on and being part of our show. I gotta definitely get guys like you on. Guys, we've played, shared the stage so many freaking times. It's like, you know, you gotta get one of these days. I'll get Cliffy on this show, and we'll hear about his folk album.
Be prepared to talk about what?
Cliff loves to talk. He loves to talk. I mean,
oh, I know.
I know you. I know you do. I mean, even on our bi-weekly video.
No, I was
going
to say, be prepared to talk about a lot of a Kiss.
Oh yeah, he loves to bring up Kiss. We love the bus.
No thanks.
Forget it.
You're out, Cliff. Forget it.
Sucks. He knows it. He doesn't like to admit it. But yeah, he loves. If you
just
happen
like
to go back and watch, even more so than me.
Yes, Mike actually can somewhat be quiet when
Cliff's
in the room.
I contain myself when Cliff's in a room. Like, and I call it a room, a Google Hangout.
Mm.
He loves to chatter. And that's good though. I mean he loves to talk about stuff. That's
good. Yeah, man. He's always been that way. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks to both of you very much, and we'll put everything that we talked about, send us some links and everything, we'll put it up in notes for everybody. And thanks. See y'all next week.
Yep. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye.